The K-12 Education Committee will come to order. First thing on the agenda is to approve the minutes of March 22nd. Representative Slawik moves the minutes of March 22nd. Are there any additions or corrections? Not. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposition? The amendments are approved. The first thing that we're going to do today is recognize someone in the audience. There is a young man who has been working as an intern for Mr. Strom, who I understand for about 2 years.
Oh, really?
And his name is Nitin Rao. And would you stand? And now I want to know, is your mind still all right after working for Mr. Strom for 2 years?
I'm okay,
yeah.
Yeah? Learned a lot.
Good. Well, I'm sure you did, because Mr. Strom is just a wonderful person and great to have him here in our committee. He's a real asset to all of us. Thank you. Hope you've really had a great experience. We want to, the first thing I think we'll do is go through the spreadsheet. So if you will pull out your spreadsheets, we'll go through quickly what is on the bill. Our number that we are looking at as far as our target is $8.2 million. And that was about $1 million over the governor's target that he came out with. And Mr. Crow, do you want to just go through the spreadsheet? And
yes, Madam Chair. If members would take out this large spreadsheet, it has 4 pages of appropriations and 4 pages of levies attached. We'll look at the 7th column from the right and the 2nd column from the right. House minus base difference, that way you'll be able to see where the changes are. If a program is italicized, that means there's been a policy change to generate a change in the appropriation, if you look in the program column. So the first change is on line 8, and this is the aid impact of driver's license suspension bill, and you'll also see a small amount of effect in integration and special ed in 2006-2007, and you'll see a small aid of a levy effect when we get to that spreadsheet. Line 9, transition revenue four-year-old pre-kindergarten programs. This is programs like the High Five program. This is the aid appropriation added to transition for those districts, and there's also a levy impact. I should also note that over in the left column there is a indication of what article in the bill these individual programs are in. For example, the driver's license language is in Article 2, but the appropriation affects general ed in Article 1. So that's why you see it here on the tracking sheet. Then line 10, this is the grade promotion bill, and there's a small general ed impact in 2006 and 2007. Line 11, this is where we're accounting for the aggregate survey that will be in the environment bill. There, you see there's $2,000 of cost in 2005 and then $2,000 of net savings in 2007. This is the interest for the permanent school fund effect. Then line 12 is the shift savings with the levy increases that are in the levy tracking sheet. You can see that's $11.135 million. There's about $26.5 million of levies on the levy tracking sheet, which is higher than the governor's, which you see was at 1955. That the shift percentage stays the same at 48.7%, but there is additional levy that can be shifted, so there's a one-time state aid savings. And there is a small amount of savings in 06-07 as those levies grow, but the bulk of it is in 05. Then the next change, you have to go all the way down to line 28, and there's a change in how we define transportation costs, and that has an impact on non-public pupil transportation. Let me also note if there's an 11 in the House article number column, those are forecast changes, so they aren't changes from base because that's the base number, but you will see those appropriations in the bill, and we'll talk about that when we do Article 11. Then the next change is on line 34 and 35, charter school startup and building lease aid increases in 2006 and 2007 only because of the additional sponsors allowed in the bill that's in front of you. Then go to line 49. Best practices grants are reduced to $250,000 in fiscal year 05, and with a rider to continue the appropriation for the new visions project, and then that amount is reduced to $200,000 in 06 and $100,000 in 07. And the next change is on line 54, where an additional $1.5 million on an ongoing basis is added to the online learning appropriation. The next change is on line 57, where the YouthWorks program is reduced in fiscal 2007 only by $400,000. Then the next change you'll see is on line 60, that's the $500,000 one-time appropriation for those regional planning and cooperative planning grants. Line 61 is the $210,000 one-time for the Scholars of Distinction program. Line 62 is $250,000 in 05 and $3.2 million in 06 and 07 for the value-added program. Then the next change, you see the small changes on 66 and 70. In special ed, those are tied again to the driver's license bill. The next change is line 79. There's a reduction in debt service equalization in 2006 and 7, and from the reduction in the maximum effort loan rate. And on line 80, you see the increase in state costs for debt service because of that same maximum effort loan rate reduction. Line 83 is the Rural Telecommunications Access Program. Line 94 and 97 offset each other and is the technical adjustment in the library's appropriations. Then on line 111, you see an additional $1.3 million added to the base for school readiness, which costs on a one-time basis. Which cost $1,040,000 in fiscal 2005 and additional $260,000 in fiscal 2006. Then on line 128 is the effect on adult basic education aid because of the recapturing of the unspent funds on an ongoing basis. And line 132 is the ongoing transfer of
venture. Madam Chair, can we just slow down just slightly? We've all been through this once, but can you just slow down just a tiny bit so we can track this easier? Okay, thank you.
Line 132 is the ongoing transfer of lead abatement funding to the Department of Health. Then on lines 142 to 152 are the changes to the Department of Education budget. And there are several changes in there that we should look at. The first is on line 144. That's a general overall reduction to their operating budget. What was done is that there was 3% taken out of their budget in the governor's proposal, and that's the 682 you see under governor's rec minus base, 682,000. This proposal would take the same 682,000, but instead of allowing the department to allocate that cut among the boards of teaching administration and the school organizations, actually takes a 3% cut from the boards of teaching and administration and administrators. So you see the 24 in difference, House minus Governor, $24,000, where this proposal would be higher than the Governor on line 144 for the agency. It is offset on lines 148 and 149, the corresponding $24,000 reduction for those two boards. The other changes in the department's budget are on line 145. There's a inclusion of funding in 2006 and 2007 for the department's oversight activities related to the additional charter schools sponsored by the five single-purpose sponsors. And then on line 146, there's $180,000 in the current biennium for the refocusing of school readiness initiative that the governor had, and then because those are only part of fiscal 2005, the total cost is $225,000 a year, and you see that in 2006 and 2007. Then on line 147 is the school district efficiencies reviews. There's $100,000 for the Department of Education to conduct those reviews at the request of districts. That's it for the Department of Education. If you look at the line 158, you see the reduction for the Minnesota State Academies at $31,000. And then on line 163, you see the reduction for the School for the Arts at $179,000. Line 170 shows the net of negative $2,911 in spending. Your target was negative $2,910. If you look on the next page, on line 187, we'll jump down. There's $1,000 of general fund revenue from the provision that allows for alternative teacher licensure. The assumption in the fiscal note being that there will be additional teachers paying additional license fees, and the fiscal note had $1,000. So you see that on line 187 of general fund revenue. So then if you go down to line 191, the net is minus $2,912, and if you don't include the shift changes, total spending is actually increasing by $8.223 million. Madam Chair and members, if you turn to now to page levies, page 104, which should still be in your packet. We'll do the same thing. As you know, fiscal 04 and fiscal 05 levies are already set, so we'll be looking at the two groups of columns. The large six-column groupings on the right half of the page are for fiscal 2006 and fiscal 2007. The column that we'll look at to see the changes in the bill is House minus current law difference. So, for example, on line 7, transition revenue goes up $3,973,000 in fiscal 06, $4,448,000 in fiscal year 07, and that's the transition revenue for those kindergarten programs. And because 05 is already set, you see on line 69 it says last year transition equity operating capital adjustments. So what that line is doing is letting them levy in 06 for a 100% forward shifted 05 revenue of $2.476 million for that same program. If you go back to line 10, this is the levy impact of the driver's license cancellation bill. Line 27 is the restoration of 100% payment of unemployment insurance. You see that in both years. Line 30 is increasing the Safe Schools levy back to $30 from $27. And line 31 is adding $2 per pupil in member districts of intermediates for Safe Schools levy. Line 32 is putting judgments, the judgment levy back at 100% of costs. And line 41 is allowing districts to levy up to $30,000 per carpenter bus in their bus fleet for replacement of those buses. And line 54 is $63,900 for the Glencoe Silver Lake District to replace its gym floor. Line 57 is allowing East Grand Forks to do its disabled access levy. Line 59 is allowing districts to levy 100% of their building lease costs. Line 61 allows the Mounds View School District to levy up to $200,000 a year for maintenance facility. And again, on line 69 is a transition for the kindergarten programs. And if you go down to line 102, you see maximum effort school loan, the change from the rate change in the maximum effort school loans. And line 104 allows the Northeast Metro Intermediate to do a fund transfer from the debt redemption fund. Line 128 allows for 72 cents additional community ed per capita to be levied. 72 cents was the reduction last year. For fiscal 2006, that $3.6 million, half of that money can be forward shifted 100% to show up as to be spent in fiscal year 05. Then half would be left in fiscal year 06 for expenditure during fiscal 06, and then the full $3.6 million would be available in fiscal year 07 for expenditure during fiscal year 07. And those are the changes. You see at the very bottom, if you go to line 166, total certified levies after credits. For fiscal year 2006, levies are $26.2 million higher and $22.3 million higher in 2007.
All right. Any questions on this question? All right, if not, we will go through the bill very quickly. Many of these provisions we've already seen sometimes several times in a row. And then we have amendments, and I think what we will do is maybe we'll go through each article and take amendments by article. I think that would be easier. First thing we do need to do is to move House File 3016 to be before our committee. This will be the bill that all of the amendments or our articles will be amended to. So I would move that be before our committee for the vehicle. The general education article, section 1, the language is in regard to the High Five program, allowing it to continue in the directions by which it is to continue. Basic skills intervention program is a program that must provide or contract for summer school classes if students fail to pass the basic skills tests. On page 2, section 3 and 4 is Representative Slawick's bill on seatbelt usage, or not seatbelt usage, but safety patrol belt usage. On page 3 is the language striking the requirement that school districts have to have an annual report stating how much it would take to, how much money it would take to educate children or help bring them up to the basic skills standards. So on page 5 of section 6 is the language by Representative Krinke to reinforce that school districts can have summer school programs, enrichment programs, and can charge fees for those. Page 6 is department language that talks about how expenditures by buildings should be allocated. Again, on page 7, section 8 is department language. Again, talking about how the calculation for expenditure by building is to be done. On page 8, section 9 is a technical department amendment. We don't have capital expenditures per se, and it's an obsolete language. On page 12, there's clarifying language from the department on how homeless students are being transported in the special education area. And then on page 13, the department has some clarifying language as to what can be charged as legal transportation expenses, making sure that you're not... that the definition for transportation and who's providing that or providing the support for that is clear. On page 16, there's department clarification again on homeless transportation. On page 17, this clarifies that if a district is contracting with an alternative program and they happen to change and contract with a different one, it tells how the compensatory revenue will be calculated and how it will be distributed to those ALCs. On page 18 is a continuation of the kindergarten programs. We've been calling them the High Five program, but there are a number of school districts that are participating, and again, this is more clarification as to how that transition revenue is to be used for those districts to continue those programs. The section 16 is clarification language on how pre-kindergarten programs would be how their money would be spent. Again, this is an additional language for the High Five and other programs. Page 20, this is some department language that says that compensatory revenue can, 10% of compensatory revenue can be used for to support pre-kindergarten programs. And then on page 21, if those uses, if compensatory is to be used for pre-kindergarten programs, then there are some specific charges as to how they must use it. Then section 19 on page 21 and going on to page 22 is represents the core head language about ballot simplification for operating referendum to make it clear to the public as to what the districts are doing when they go out for operating referendum. Then on page 24 you see the language for the reinstatement of judgment levy at 100%. On the bottom of page 25, section 22, you have the restoration of the Safe Schools levy at the full $30. Then, starting on page 26 and going on to page 27, we clarify that the department may withhold from any school district or charter school monies until they turn in their financial audit. And it has the process by which they can withhold and do that. We've had quite a discussion in the committee on that. It also states on page 29, if you look on line 11, that the amount of withholding can be no more than 1% of a district's basic revenue for failure to submit an audited financial report. Then on section 26 is language regarding people who may be divorced or legally separated and allowing those parents to designate which residence that their child, if they have children, are residing in for purposes of finances, revenue for them. On page 29, section 27 is just a clarification on some cross-subsidy reports. We have one for special ed and we have one for compensatory. It's been broken out into two sections and clarified. Then we have Representative Demmer's bill that we heard Monday, on inspecting school buses. Then go on to page 34, and then you have the general education aid appropriations adjusted for how we are spending our monies. On page 35, there is a report that is required on kindergarten pupils. I should look on my... Oh, this is, okay, this is in regard, again, to the those transition programs for kindergarten, just to continue the reporting of certain pre-kindergarten pupils in their pupil count for revenue. Then we have in Section 32 the trial transportation fee proposal by Representative Adolphson. We also have on page 36 Representative Abler's pilot program to allow ANOCA to distribute the compensatory allocation differently. And then on section 34, we have the school bus levy for the Carpenter school buses. If you remember, those were buses that are need to be pulled off of the road because they've been identified as structurally unsafe. And then we have the repealer, 126C, 23, and Ms. Larson, on the repealer is... Okay, that's the building allocation, current provision allocating general ed revenue among buildings. And this was replaced by another procedure. That is all of Article 1. Are there any questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Flower.
Madam Chair, page 34, line 31 and 32, my understanding of that is the forecast change.
Which line are you looking at?
Page 34, line 31 and
32. No.
Okay. Madam Chair and members, that change is in there because if you remember back on your spreadsheet, there were changes that impact the general ed program, like the more kids in school because of the driver's license bill. So this incorporates the forecast changes, and if you look at your spreadsheet, it also incorporates the shift and the aggregate survey, the driver's license, and the high five or the kindergarten program. So relative to the forecast change, it's the entire appropriation is negative 9779. So it incorporates all of both the forecast changes and policy changes. So there's one other place where an appropriation includes both a forecast change and a policy change, and that's in the integration appropriation that you'll see in Article 2. There was $6,000 of additional integration aid cost because of the driver's license bill. So you'll see a big change in the integration appropriation, but that's primarily the forecast change, and then there's a small change. Otherwise, all of the other forecast changes are in Article 11. And then you see the debt service appropriation will be in Article 11, but the statutory appropriation for debt service is in Article 4, and those reflect for 04 and 05 the forecast changes, and for 06 and 07 the forecast changes along with the changes in the maximum effort program. So there are three places where they're mixed together.
Madam Chair. Okay.
Representative Salek.
Thank you. I think I understood that. It's so complicated, but thank you for explaining it.
Well, thank you. Any other questions for Article 1? All right, we'll go on to Article 2. Article 2 is, I have my graph. There are three sections actually that talk about data privacy issues, and one is in regard to the school accountability data. And it will be non-public data And there's another section in Article 2 that also cross-references this in regard to when we roll out the AYP schools that might be have not made adequate progress. We're causing that data to be private until all the appeals processes and everything are gone through so that we don't get this data out ahead of time. It's a fair situation for schools to do it that way. Section 2 is in regard to the value-added assessment, and Representative Dabney had brought this up in committee, and I agreed with him to make sure that as we do a value-added assessment that we clarify that teacher data will always be private data and only be used within the district for student improvement and teacher improvement, but not to be reported to the public. And then in the school accountability area, again, Section 3 is in regard to the performance report cards. And, again, that is cross-referencing the reporting of that data to keep it private until all of the appeals are processed. Section 4 is the driver's license bill that was brought to us by Representative Johnson. Section 5 is just a clarification on the graduation requirements on line 26. To talk about the 9, 10, and 11 standards in math. That was brought to us by one of the professors at the University of Minnesota. He found that that needs to be clarified. And then we also, in clause 4, on lines 29 through 36, that clarifies the flexibility for graduation requirements for social studies to allow districts to kind of do their own way of arranging their U.S. and world and standards and to do it the way that they would like. Then if you go on down to page 3, subdivision 2, that just clarifies that students that have participated in AP classes, are in PSEO, that meet rigorous course study can have the graduation requirements. There can have to be a waiver of that. Then on page 4, section 6, we have the reading cards. That was Representative Nelson's bill that would just require teachers to make sure that there's a small little reading record put into the permanent academic record and passed on from teacher to teacher. That is not done right now, and since we have a lot of emphasis on reading, this would is kind of a practical common sense thing to do. Section 7 is Representative Wardlow's bill providing for student retention for school children if they don't meet their academic progress goals. Then on page 6, there's some department language on Section 8 at the top clarifying how gifted and talented programs should develop student identification for participation in those programs. Section 9 is Representative Severson's Scholars of Distinction program. Then on page 7 and 8 of Article 2, we have, again, the clarification that school performance report cards are non-public data until the department posts the data to its public website. And that would also mean that there had been an appeal process, et cetera. Subdivision 2, again, is that's again, the data privacy situation. Section 11 is the actual value-added language that we're establishing a contracting process now to begin a pilot to get the bugs worked out for a value-added program. Then on page 9, 10, and ours is the beginning of Representative Cleansing epinephrine bill. On the bottom of page 10 is some language that was brought by me on behalf of the National Association for Mental Illness, just requiring that if a student had been suspended for 10 or more times, that a school should have a conference and with the parents and have a mental health screening and maybe then look at perhaps going on to an evaluation if that is felt to be needed. On page 11 is the establishment of or clarification of what comprehensive scientifically based reading instruction is. And then we establish a literacy specialist license, which is later on in the bill. And we also exempt, a couple of years ago, we had placed the reading requirement for continuing ed in statute. And what we're doing is you'll see further on, is exempting a number of different kinds of teachers from that don't have direct classroom instruction responsibilities for students in the reading area. And that's on page 13. On page 14, we have district reimbursement for the cost of a substitute teacher that is providing professional assistance to the school board of administrators, or the board of school administrators, pardon me. Then on page 14, we have the house definition, not house as in the House of Representatives, but the H-O-U-S-S-E, and I don't ask me to tell you what that acronym is. I never can remember it. Maybe Representative Sikora can. But this is for those 900 teachers right now that that have a degree, are teaching, but are maybe teaching in another subject area in addition to the one that they're licensed for, and would provide them some way of being validated as a highly qualified teacher. And they will have up till 2007 to meet that definition. And everyone else has to meet the and the rest of the teachers that have a content license are fine in that area. And then newly hired would have to meet the highly qualified definition going forward. Again, on page 17 is the continuation of the reading licensure provisions and a more clarification of the strategies for teaching reading. In section 19, you see the literacy specialist license being established and Board of Teaching adopting rules for that licensure. On page 17 and 18, this is department language to say that there has to be some reporting of when a teacher or administrator is suspended without an investigation. There's some clarification there with the department. On page 19 is the epinephrine bill. It goes on to page 20, and then at the bottom of page 20 is Representative Erickson's teacher training program for qualified professionals, an alternative way to be licensed. And then on the bottom of page 22 is Representative Krinke's language on employee contracts for services. Then on section 24, page 23 and 24, is Representative Demmer's bill to allow the superintendents with the board approval to be able to assign teachers and administrators to buildings, that they would have to reserve the right to do that. And that goes on page 25. On page 26, Representative Norness had a bill in regard to allowing school board members to earn up to $8,000 if they served on a board. A lot of rural districts have part-time employees serving on their boards, and this would allow them to earn just a little additional money and still be able to be on the school board. Then the next few pages following is Representative Klinzing's bill regarding charter schools and how they would be allowed to participate in extracurricular activities in their resident district. And there's language that follows for several pages regarding that. On page 31, there's a department clarification of online learning. And this is in regard to some of our existing charter schools who had about 40% of their teaching actually at a building site. And it clarifies that they would be eligible for regular education funding, not online, because they have more than 40% of their time, of their students enrolled in a regular bricks and mortar building. Again, on page 32, it's a continuation of Representative Klinzing's charter school bill. It was kind of what I called the omnibus charter school bill this year. It allows for five charitable organizations whose primary focus would be establishing charters to be established, but the Commissioner of Education would have to approve their qualifications and make sure that they were able to do what they wanted to do. On page 34, we have a change in language on charter schools. Right now, there must be a majority of teachers on a charter school board. We've heard from a lot of charters and from teachers, too, that are in charter schools that they want to be part members of the board, definitely. But it causes a hardship sometimes to have a majority of teachers, and so we're trying to allow for some flexibility in that particular instance, those instances. Again, on page 36, there's some more charter school language about participation in extracurriculars. On page 38 is the Surf, Minnesota request. They are changing the structure of the membership of their board, and this would be more aligned to the federal definition of how their board should be. They are not any longer within the state's purview, and they're a nonprofit, and they want to organize more as a nonprofit. On page 40, you have the new definition of English language learners. There's three stages of English language learners now. Your beginning level, and then you have a mid-level and a level where they're competent to speak English. Then on page 41, there is just an insertion on the Community Transition Interagency Committee. That's a committee that for disabled children to talk about their transition from high school into work. And right now, there is not anyone on those committees that represent the mental health community. And so we would add a mental health community on those transition teams. On page 42, Representative Abler brought a bill to clarify what we did last year on high school diving to make sure that there was a situation with a school district that had several pools, but were forced to just go to one pool. Because of the restrictions that we placed on them last year. Then on page 42, section 39, is a continuation of the driver's license bill. And that goes on through page 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, keeps going through page 52. Then on page 53, you have the continuation of the new definition for an English language learner. On page 53 and 54, 55, then you have the fluent language learner. Continues on through page 46. And then, Mr. Crow, do you want to just talk about, you mentioned the integration aid on section 47.
Yes, Madam Chair, that's where you see the extra $6,000. If there were a forecast change only, the appropriation would be $55,893,000. It would be in Article 11, but because of the driver's license bill, there are more students in school, is the assumption, and that some of those students will be in schools that qualify for integration revenue, so that's $6,000 higher than it would be if it was just a forecast change, and you see that on the spreadsheet.
And then in Section 48, the governor had proposed to eliminate the best practice seminars, but in talking about that, we discovered that the New Vision School that does a lot of replication of its program throughout the state would have its funding cut, so we restored that, but we propose that be kind of trimmed down over the next couple of years to give them time to look at some other opportunities to generate money for that program. Then under the alternative teacher compensation, we just have a technical change that any balance in the first year does not cancel but is available the second year. On page 58, there was some clarification to the APIB programs, just to make sure that if they have enough money for training, they can put more money into subsidizing the fees that the kids take, the exam fees that they take after completing coursework. On the, let's see, the Youth Works program, we kept the appropriation that was proposed to be reduced by the department, but we do in 2007 reduce it to $500,000. The intent of Serve Minnesota is to eventually move to more private funding to leverage their federal money, so we're giving them another year to do that and then kind of phasing them out. On Section 52, online learning, we increased the appropriation for online learning by $1.5 million. And statewide testing, there's instruction to adopt rules for this, a test that are being developed right now. On Section 54, we have the School Innovation and Cooperative Planning Grants. That was, I can't remember whose bill that was at this point. Then we have on Section 55 the high performance teachers bill, and it's a 5-year pilot. That was Representative Jeff Johnson's bill. That goes on for several pages. On page 66 is the appropriation in 06 and 07 of $500,000 per year. Then in section 57, sub 2, you see the appropriation for value added and then a base budget of 1.6 for 06 and 07. That will be when it's fully operational and we will be running that program. And you have, see the one-time appropriation for the Innovation and Cooperative Planning Grants, one-time money for the Scholarships of Distinction. And then we have the sunset language. When this house definition that we discussed for qualified teachers will sunset in 07, and so that's what that Section 58 is. And then the repealers, Ms. Larson, are... Okay, it's all the Youth Works language that was in our statutes before. Any questions on Article 2? Representative Daphne and then Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do need to take us back to page 22, section 23 of the bill, beginning on line 36, what I affectionately think of as the crinky language on... contracting out of services, and I've got some very grave and significant reservations and concerns about the negative impact this will have on school climate and on local communities. It forces people to enter collective bargaining with a gun to their head, knowing that one side can unilaterally not only block the collective bargaining process that's supposed to be a movement towards collective problem solving, not only block that process, but then cancel their jobs, privatize them out if they don't immediately agree to whatever is put on the table first. That's going to have a very negative effect on school climate as people feel not that they're a part of a team, not that they're part of a community, not that their work is valued and respected, but instead that they're there only as long as they are good, dutiful, and quiet and don't bring forward their family's needs and concerns to the bargaining table. And it's going to have a negative effect on communities as that negative experience resonates out into the community and as salaries and benefits don't keep up with inflation and people have less money in their pocket to spend at the local restaurant and clothing store and pay their taxes with and all of that, and will have a negative effect rippling through the community through our small businesses. And I'm very disturbed to see that this language is back again this year.
Well, Madam Chair, I have comments on that same language. I am very disturbed that this ended up in this bill because it's a very definite effort to interfere in the collective bargaining process, and I think that's a big mistake. I think that's a road that we shouldn't be going down, and we've gone down it once before in the majority, in this current majority, and it's really an effort to get our noses in where they don't belong. I think the labor groups and management groups are doing just a fine job of figuring out their differences, even though sometimes it takes time. There is no appropriate action that the bargaining unit can take if management holds off and doesn't want to negotiate. There's no quid pro quo in here for them to come back and say, okay, if you don't do this, if you don't get back to the bargaining table outside of striking. And I think you might be forcing strikes if you put this language in there. And then all the things that Representative Dabney said were going to happen are going to happen. If you break these unions down, you may as well be prepared for all these folks to come into the legislature and asking you for money, because we have several bargaining units in the state and local governments now that really do that work. They do that work. They go to the table and they bargain for wages and benefits. And without those unions, they'd be coming here and asking you. Teachers would come separately, and service workers in the schools would come separately, and the 400 different job classifications in the state would come separately, and you'd have people down here all the time asking you that their special group needs special increases for special reasons. The bargaining process prevents that and keeps it at the local level where it belongs and within that school. And this is just a blatant attempt to get the legislature involved where we do not belong. And I really object to this, and it needs to come out on the floor.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments on the Article 2? Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know we covered this in the committee a few weeks ago, but on the ELL language, it begins on, I think it's 53. It's in a couple of places. We create
which
these three.
Which page did you say?
I'm sorry. I'm looking at page 53
okay.
of Article 2.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of reframing the way that we identify students of limited English proficiency, and we're creating these three, I think there are three categories, that look to be, sort of look to progress in terms of proficiency in connection to test scores. And I think this was the department, if I remember right, the department's recommendation. And I guess, you know, just And I can follow up more with the department later, but I'm just very quickly, just for my own kind of comfort, wanting to get an articulation of what essentially that does.
Is there somebody from the department that has the ELL background? Ms. Montano, thank you. Glad you're here. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, I'm Jesse Montano from the Department of Education. The rationale behind defining what an ELL student is and classifying that student basically into three different levels is consistent with the definition that we had approved under the NCLB workbook. We felt that since there have been so many questions throughout the years from legislators as to what is an ELL student, how long does it take them to acquire English language skills, that this clearly lays out the three processes that these students go through with respect to acquiring English language skills. The first, if you look at how a student acquires language, it's first through listening and speaking and then reading and writing. And so the three definitions clearly lay out the process that these students go through.
Okay. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, so the new framework has no impact one way or the other in terms of funding for the ELL program. Does that change any of the formulations?
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, I think the language, if I recall correctly, caps it at 5 years, but there was language there also that spoke to at a point in time when the student scores level that is proficient, that that student would no longer be eligible to acquire ELL funding. I don't believe this changes that.
Representative Montagne, or Ms. Montagne, would it change the point at which an ELL student would have to demonstrate AYP? So that would there be some kind of a safe harbor in this language? So that I guess that's what I was wondering about.
The point where a student would be counted in terms of AYP would be at the point where they're looking at passing the MCAs. And with respect to how this is worded, if I can find that, I think it's on page 55, line 24, the pupil has scored on a proficient level on the state reading assessment aligned with the state academic standards three times or for as many times as the student as the state reading assessment is given during the pupil's last three academic years. So it does give the student three opportunities to make sure that they are proficient, because we find that they reach proficiency, and if they don't continue to receive service, they fall back, and that's a safeguard.
Okay. All right. We have Representative Biscuits.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, would you like to do amendments while we've talked about each article, or do you want to do the whole bill first? And then
no, we're going to do amendments by article.
Okay.
We have two. I just wanted to make sure there were no more questions before we moved on to amendments. All right. We do have the A1 amendment in your packet. This is Representative Biscuits. Would you like to explain it?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
All right, so moved.
All right. Madam Chair and members, the A1 amendment speaks to the segment, section 17 of the bill, the highly qualified teacher section. I do appreciate very much what Representative Sikora brought forward to the committee. However, I have a concern with referencing federal law in our state statutes and the conundrums which I could envision as one would change and the other remains tries to remain stable and the inherent conflicts. So the purpose of this amendment is to simply say, you know, if we're going to have a definition for highly qualified teacher, then it should be a definition that we as Minnesotans agree to and not that we agree to simply because the federal government says we have to. And so that's the purpose of the amendment. That's basically what I do. There's a few grammatical changes in the amendment to this section. And then finally, Madam Chair and members, lines 16 and 17 were... It talks about deleting lines from pages 67 and 68, delete the sunset clause, and I have been convinced that that is something I don't want to do. So, Madam Chair, I'd like to amend the amendment by striking lines 16 and 17.
All right. So, if everyone's clear about the amendment to the amendment, Representative Biscuits would... strike that language.
Okay. Madam Chair, can I incorporate that into
it? Incorporate it, yeah. Why don't you just incorporate it?
I will incorporate
right.
that.
Are there any questions to represent this against amendment as it now stands? All right. If not, all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposition? The A1 amendment is adopted. And then we have Representative Goodwin, Article 2. This would be the A3 amendment, is that correct?
Okay. Madam Chair and members, this amendment would have school boards put together a policy that prohibits bullying. This issue has been a serious issue for Minnesota. We're one of the few states that hasn't developed a policy on bullying. I understand that the school board association, and I've read their policy, and it's excellent, and it's very good the way it goes. But the thing is that it's not mandatory for school districts to adopt that. It's a very serious problem in Minnesota. Minnesota has this for children ages 10 to 18. suicide is the second leading cause of death. In other states, in the nation, it's third. In the nation as a whole, it's third, but in Minnesota, it's second. We have situations all over Minnesota where children have committed suicide, where they have used weapons, and the latest information from the U.S. Department of Justice says that every single shooting in the United States had some bullying component attached to it. So it's time that the state make a statement that bullying will not be allowed in schools. Boys identified by age 8 are 6 times more likely to be convicted of a crime by age 24 and 5 times more likely than non-bullies to end up with serious criminal records. Students reported that 71% of the teachers and other adults in the classroom ignore bullying incidents. Aggressive behavior is learned early and becomes resistant to change if it persists beyond age 8. So this amendment of mine is definitely, it's reduced from the bill I've been trying to get a hearing on for 3 years and that Kathy Tingle said has been trying to get a hearing on for 2 years. This issue has not even been given a hearing in the K-12 or Education Policy Committees, and it's such an important issue, I feel, so strongly that we need to make a statement from the state that bullying will not be allowed in our schools. This is very, if I did nothing else in my time in the legislature, I feel this is so important that we absolutely do need to do it and make a statement that bullying will not be allowed in our schools. I know that some schools have adopted the School Board Association's policy, and I'm very happy that they have, but that's not enough because they don't have to develop a policy right now. It's definitely optional for them, and it's not. I've been getting letters from people all over the state about the things their children have gone through. I've gotten pictures of a special needs child on a bus in my school districts that was beaten up so badly that he had to go to the hospital because he wouldn't give away the sucker that he has saved for his teacher, for his sister at home. It's really a serious, serious issue, and I just really would like your support on this. It's not a threatening thing to do. It's just saying that the school districts really need to develop a policy on this and be serious about addressing this problem if we expect to have safe schools. The truancy rates are much higher in school for kids that are bullied. The physical illness rate is much higher. The suicide rate is much higher. And I really think that we definitely need to do this, and we need to do it now. I worked in children's mental health, and I can't tell you the number of kids that I saw on both sides of this issue, children that were bullies and children that were bullied, and both of them were sick and had trouble and lots of difficulty later on in life. And it does extend to later on in life, even if they don't end up in prison, because 1 in 6 working people are bullied, and these children that are allowed to bully go on to be bullies in the workplace. And I think that we have an obligation to say that that's not acceptable in Minnesota. And I would like to ask for a roll call vote on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I want to speak in support of Representative Goodwin's amendment. You know, in this committee, we focus so much on academics and on testing and on no child left behind. What we don't talk about is what's really happening with kids in our schools. And one of the very real issues is bullying. There are kids that are afraid to go to school. There are kids that have problems when they get there, and there's kids that have problems when they get home because of what happens in our school environment. Our teachers are doing the best they can. Our schools are doing the best they can. But bullying is something that I think we just should have a no-tolerance policy on. I had 2 school safety meetings, and one in Oakdale in my district and also one in Duluth with Congressman Oberstar, to talk about safety inside schools, to talk about safety outside schools, and by far the biggest issue that came up was bullying, and this is with nurses, social workers, school counselors, parents, students, all talking about this issue. And it's not isolated to Minnesota. It is in our country, and we're falling behind. They're passing policies like this all over the country, as Representative Goodwin says. So I think it's time we take a look at what's happening in our schools. I think this is not too much to ask. It's about the safety of our kids, and I hope we pass this amendment.
All right. Representative Hunzing first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering if I could ask the Minnesota School Boards Association a couple of questions.
Madam Chair, my name is Tom Dean. I'm legal counsel of the School Board Association.
Welcome. Madam Chair, I'm Grace Schwab. I'm the Director of Governmental Relations for the School Board Association.
Welcome to you, too. Representative Hunzing, you want to ask your question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering if Mr. Deans and Ms. Schwab, if you could share how many, since you have a nice model policy, how many school boards that you know of have already, or school districts have already adopted policies, and how many of them are using the policy that you have, and how many of them don't have any sort of policy regarding bullying?
Ms. Schwab.
Madam Chairman, Representative Hunzing, about half the school districts have adopted it. It's a relatively new policy. It's something we developed last year, and they're slowly implementing it and working through. The one piece I would argue is give us some flexibility with the statutory language. The policy is still voluntary, but it connects with many other policies in the school. It's really not something you can look at singly as you go forward.
And Madam Chair, this issue, as Representative Goodwin said, is, you know, it's been before this committee before. We proactively put together this model policy, and people have seen that policy, and I think that they think uniformly it's a very good, very tough policy. And it's in the process of being implemented. School districts have cycles that they go through and they adopt policies for their different series. Some of them haven't gotten to it yet, but I think that they're in the process. This was released originally in 2003, so they're in the process of doing it. I think, as Ms. Schwab said, our position is it's kind of a policy decision for you to say whether you think you ought to mandate that we have a policy. I mean, you know, we can live with that, if that's what you say, that's what we'll do. We're in the process of doing it, but if that's what you say, that's what we'll do. But we would just ask that you not put quite such prescriptive language in the statute. If you want us to say that we should adopt a policy prohibiting bullying, then I think that you should say that, and then we don't have to rewrite this whole policy and redo the deal, unless people think something that we have is wrong. And it coordinate. This policy is coordinated so that it applies with students. It applies with the professional staff that are there. If they see bullying going on and they don't deal with it, they're also disciplined. Or if they are the bulliers, they're also disciplined. I mean, we think we would try to address those issues in our model. So I guess that would be my comments. They're in the process.
Yes, Madam Chair, Mr. Deans, what I was curious about is how is your board policy that you are encouraging districts to adopt, how does it differ from this policy?
Mr.
Deans. Madam Chair, Representative Sikora, I'm not certain at this point. This is the first time I've seen the language of the amendment, and I haven't had a chance to sit down and go through that against this. I'm not certain that we're going to be totally out of whack with this, but you actually, if you're going to do the due diligence on this, you actually have to sit down and have a little time to analyze it. And trying to do it in the back of that room while you're also reading the whole bill is not feasible.
I'll let Ms. Representative Goodwin, she wants maybe respond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And most of what's in Section 1 of my bill is in the MSBA policy, and the MSBA policy really mirrored my original bill, which this one is much less prescriptive, this amendment, than my original bill. So basically, their current policy is as stringent, if not more stringent, than this bill. And that's a good thing, but And I, like I said, I think they have a good policy, but I still think we need a statement. Just because a school district adopts the MSBA policy doesn't mean they'll follow it, or doesn't mean they won't eventually drop it. And I think it's important enough that we need to have it in law.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, and most of the committee members know I work in a public school, and listening to the descriptors or at the presentation of this amendment, I was almost scared to go back. I'm wondering what the devil's going on while I'm away. All right. I just some questions. You know, I'm kind of looking at this policy, and I said that tongue in cheek because this makes good rhetoric. I'm not quite sure what it does. Representative Goodwin, what's the difference between bullying and assault?
Well, bullying, Madam Chair and Representative Biskins, assault is actually a physical. Beating or hitting or striking out, where bullying can be intimidation and consistent name calling and taking things away or knocking your books out of your hand or doing it on a consistent basis. Okay. So there is definitely a difference.
Madam Chair?
Representative Biskin.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And the reason I asked that, Representative Goodwin, because he did talk about kids who were physically getting beat up, and so I just wanted to know if there was a difference between assault, which is kids physically getting beat up, and bullying. But then my other question, and then if you could expand, please, what's the difference between bullying and harassment?
Representative well.
Goodwin. Madam Chair and Representative Biskins, harassment is I would say, well, it depends on what kind of harassment it is. They are similar. They're not the same. Bullying can, just regular bullying, can lead to violent acts and can lead to assault. That's the next step, and that's where it goes many times if it's not stopped at the bullying stage.
Madam Chair?
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, well, if it leads to violent actions, I suppose I could ask what's the difference between bullying and bullying and abuse and bullying and fighting. But what I'm trying to point out here, right, is that this is an amendment which time is not, obviously not ready at all. We have plenty of policies within our schools, each and every school, dealing with assault, dealing with fighting, dealing with abuse, dealing with harassment. They're all there already. You put in a new word, and you don't even define what it is. Right? I look through your amendment, and there is no definition as to what is bullying. And now we've got a big problem, all right? Because not only do you ask the schools to write a definition to a word we don't even define, but an interesting piece of your amendment here is on page 1, and line 16 says the policy must, and clause 2 say apply to students whose indirect behavior condones or supports acts of bullying. Now, I'm not quite sure what that means. If you see whatever this bullying is occur and decide not to get involved, do we have to now have a policy written for that? And now we're really into judgment calls, which is what my job is at school. But I just think we've got... do have safe policies. We do have school boards who really do care about their kids. They've developed, and they care more than even I do. Hard to believe, but the school board members in Jordan and in Forest Lake and in Monomedi care even more about their children in their schools than I possibly can. And I know that they are conscious of their student safety, and I think this is just an unnecessary amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Devon. Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is back for Mr. Deans again. Mr. Deans, from your experience, do school boards take the model language from MSBA and modify that much?
Mr. Deans.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dimmer, it sort of depends on the school district and the relative sophistication of their operation. Now, the one thing they know is this has already been vetted by attorneys, and it's been reviewed. We have other school districts that have, you know, their own counsel, and they want to review everything that comes to them, and that, and sometimes they'll make changes. But overall, what they come out with is usually pretty close to what the MSBA policy is. You know, some people will make some changes here or there. It doesn't quite fit their situation. Plus, some of those policies are set up so that you can adjust them to local circumstances, because one size doesn't fit all in this state. But generally, the format and the concept is it will at least be the groundwork. Some of them already had another policy, and then they'll incorporate provisions in from the MSBA policy too. But lots of them just adopted wholesale.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I just wanted to follow up. You know, we have, I got to agree with Representative Biskins, having served on a school board for 10-plus years and been involved with administration and working these things, there's a lot of sharp people on school boards that are dealing with these things, and I'd like to speak against this amendment. We don't need to be telling school boards, Madam Chair, and members that they need to do this. That this is something that they know and they can deal with, and I have a lot of confidence in administrations and school boards in our districts, and they don't need us to tell them this.
Representative Riley. Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank the School Boards Association as well for their testimony. It sounds to me like half the districts have already decided to do this. The school board has come up with the model policy, so Representative Goodwin, with her proposals, has already done a lot of good, even though she hasn't had a hearing. And so I would hope that we could perhaps slim down the amendment and just require that, I think we should require that every district have a policy. It sounds to me like they're going down this road already, and but we all know that there are some districts that don't get around to things that should be done for a variety of reasons, and those are the ones that we have the safety net for here at the legislature. And so I'm wondering, Representative Goodwin, if you would consider taking your amendment on page one and just requiring that they have a policy, and then not being so so concerned about the rest of it, and the school boards must have a policy, they already do. So just to make sure that the districts all have a policy, I think, is the important thing. I don't know if you would consider that or not, but I think that would take away a lot of our debate. When a few years ago, this committee passed, and only probably a couple of us would remember, Representative Mariani and Representative Sigrun and myself, a policy on hazing, and we had a lot of these same questions, but we ended up passing it unanimously, even though there was some debate about what was it, assault, was it harassment. By the time we actually listened to students, we understood that there was such a thing as hazing, and the very articulate students that we had here convinced us. If we'd had a hearing on this and been able to hear students who were bullied, I think they could have told us the difference between assault, harassment, and bullying. So I would urge us to pass this, and I would be very happy if it were slimmed down just to mandate that districts have a policy.
Madam Chair, I'm looking at the back page, number three, page three, under Section 56, Model Policy. Yeah. And I think this is essentially what we're suggesting happen, is that, and the school board has already developed one, but working with the commissioner, administrators, teachers, et cetera, that they develop a model policy that, you know, then can be consistent with the other stuff that we have in law so that it all kind of fits together. And that this might be the piece that we could look at as a possibility to adopt, is the model policy.
Representative Olson.
I guess in spirit of both, Madam Chair, Representative, I guess in consistent with the two previous comments, I think somewhere in between, I like the direction it's going, because I understand that, you know, it's okay to adopt a policy, just maybe not so prescriptive. I think maybe if we take Representative Greiling's suggestion about the first paragraph in combination of the last paragraph on page three, then if we have all parties working together to find some kind of state guideline and then direction to local governments to address the situation. That would be my recommendation.
Representative Goodwin, we should ask you, if we took your Clause A and Section 56 and combine those two, would that?
Well, Madam Chair, if that's what I can get a vote on, I will accept that. And you'd have to take out also on line 11, consistent with this section, those words.
Okay. All right. So on line 11, strike, put a period after bullying and strike consistent with this section. And then we'd have, so we'd have clause A, and then we go over to page 3.
And then, Madam Chair, yeah, so then it would end after handbook period on line 15.
Okay.
And we can work on something about that later. But
because I do think the model policy.
Yeah, and the only one thing I think is very important is that a policy includes the students walking route to and from school and the bus, and being on the bus, because that's where a lot of the incidences happen. And I just want to say that just yesterday I got a letter from a woman and from a person in Brooklyn Park whose child is being, 9-year-old, is being severely bullied, and oftentimes the problems, and I want to say this because some of the schools are here, people are here, it's so important when children are out on the playground, not to, when they come to you and say, whoever's on the playground, somebody's hurting me or somebody's calling me names, don't just say, stay away from them and go play, because that's the kind of thing that happens over and over and over again, where school officials are not taking this seriously, and it must be taken seriously because it only escalates. And that's true for being on the bus and back and forth to school, too. Oftentimes, the child who's being bullied is punished as much as the child who's doing the bullying. And that's exactly, so they're afraid to report. And that's exactly the wrong approach. If they defend themselves, then they're also punished. So you do need training. You need training in your schools on how to deal with this by all your staff, and you need to talk to your students about it.
Okay. The only Representative Goodwin, the only thing I have concerns with, I agree with the playground and being on the bus, but I'm wondering how the schools could be responsible if a child walks to school and, you know, on the way to school there's somebody, you know, waiting for him. I mean, it's not really the school can't police the whole neighborhood and be responsible for that. I'm wondering if we can have that on the record that you are absolutely concerned about that. And that as we go forward, we'll have the language, but have that duly noted that as we form this, you know, group that would do this. I mean, the other issues are fine. I'm just trying to think mentally. I used to be a school runner. I'm thinking, you know, what am I supposed to do? Have, you know, kids, you know, bully patrols on every corner, because it does happen. As you said, it does happen on the way to school if you're walking to school. I used to have dogs bully me.
Well, there's that too.
I used to be scared to death to walk to school because I had a couple of mean dogs that would run out all the time.
Yes, Madam Chair, so, that would be fine.
All right, that's great. Representative Bernardi, you've had your hand up now.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Goodwin commented on something really important about the bully themselves and being afraid to report it and stuff. And I work a lot in the middle school, and I have middle school children, and there's a lot of bullying that does go on, and it's quite frightening. And what I'd like to add to this is the part where it talks about districts annually must notify teachers, administrators, volunteers, contractors, and other school employees of this policy. We really need to annually be able to remind students about this policy, too. I know it mentions that it would put it in the student handbook
if they
have one, but I would really, really like to add students, because students need to be reminded of the policy, and also the people that, for the bullies, to remind them not to bully, and then also to remind the people that are bullied and victimized by these people that they have a system or process in which they can get help. So I'd really like to add students in that. If Representative Goodwin would be agreeable to that.
Mr. Dean, I think, Scott, maybe a suggestion or a comment.
Madam Chair, in our policy, we have a provision that the school district will annually provide education and information to students regarding bullying, including information regarding this policy prohibiting bullying, the harmful effects of bullying, and other applicable initiatives to prevent bullying. I mean, we've tried to address these kinds of issues. We've addressed, I think, the issue that was raised about the walking to the bus stop type thing in the policy. I mean, we've analyzed the bill as it was originally introduced and have tried to incorporate those changes into this policy to make it so that it works. But so one of the things we had to add in relating to the bus stops and that is that while prohibiting bullying at these locations and events, the school district does not represent that it will provide supervision or assume liability at those locations. If, you know, you're out in your own front yard and somebody from your class is pounding on you, we can say that that's a violation of the thing, and if it gets reported, we'll take some action, but we can't be there to stop it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Madam Chair, that's coming out now. That language is coming out. So I do agree with Representative Bernardi, and I would say, if it's okay with you, Madam Chair, that on line 12, after notify, first put students, right, and then go to teachers.
All right.
And then the amendment would be, so everybody knows, would be line 1 through 15 with the one on line 11 change, and then line 7 through the end on page 3.
Okay.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Representative Olson?
Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, I believe that's the case. We can have counsel read it back to us as well, just to clarify for the record and for staff taking notes. I might also suggest that we leave in section 14, the good faith exception. I'm sorry, page 2, line 32.
Oh, yes.
To, I believe,
right,
line 5 on the next page. But again, Lisa Larson can maybe clarify that.
Ms. Larson, why don't you read back what we've so far amended?
Madam Chair, members, the document H3016A3 is being proposed to be amended as follows. On page 1, line 6, delete parens A parens. On page 1, line 11, delete comma consistent with this section. Page 1, line 12, after notify, insert students. Page 1, delete lines 16 through 24. Page 2, delete lines 1 through 28. And that's it, Madam Chair.
All right. Ms. Larson, did you?
Madam Chair, members, on page 1, line 12, where we've inserted students, Representative Olson reminds me that we need a comma after the word students.
Oh, okay. I thought she was saying put students in there. Okay. All right, I thought you had said students. Maybe I missed it. Okay. All right, we have just a few more people to comment, and then we really want to vote on this amendment. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Seagren. I'd like to hear from Education Minnesota in regard to the onus this will put on teachers, especially noting that in the amendment the verb is still prohibits.
All right. Is Education Minnesota here? Thank you, school board folks.
Madam Chair, we have one more suggestion.
Okay, all right.
When you get, if you want to, after EM.
Okay, that's fine. You want to just stay there in the, by the, why don't you just stay there and, there you go. Do a little seat shuffling.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alsweiger, Education Minnesota, and am I correct in understanding that you would like our feelings about the recommended changes?
I think Ms. Alsweiger, Representative Erickson, was asking about Representative Erickson, why don't you ask a question? I'm not quite sure what.
Thank you, Chair Seagren. Even if we amend this, I want to know what onus does this put on teachers, administrators, volunteers, other school employees when the verb is prohibits? You know, must adopt a written district-wide policy that prohibits. Comment on that on the behalf of the teachers of Minnesota.
Ms. Alsweiger.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I think that that's a good question. I think that develop and model policy could probably define some of that. I would really want to ask our attorneys before I answer that publicly. I don't think that that would be something that I would want to take a stab at here today. But I would be more than happy to get a response to all of you if you'd like.
Chair Segrin.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Ms. Alsweiger, because I think that in this litigious society, we're going to subject these employees to something that we don't want to do in using the verb prohibit. So I hope legal counsel will help us understand the responsibility this will place on teachers and other school employees.
To that point, Ms. Madam Chair.
Closing.
I just want to illustrate kind of a real-life example of what I think Representative Erickson is alluding to, and that is that I had a classroom of 35 ninth-grade students, two-thirds of whom were boys. And believe me, there was a lot of harassing and bullying going on fourth hour every day. This was just last December, two Decembers ago. And I was doing everything under my power to make sure that the harassing and the bullying would not continue. But there was a point at which there were two boys in the class that got to blows with each other. Before they could hit each other, I stood between them. And when I got called down to the principal's office to talk about it, the principal said, "Why didn't you stop the harassment before this happened?" So I'm concerned that the word prohibit here puts all of the onus not on the bullier, but on the teacher who did not stop it before it got to that point. And I had been working with the parents, with the counselors all along, following our policy in the school to try to decrease this. We even tried to separate the boys in the classes, and their schedules would not accommodate it. So I guess I'm a little concerned that we proceed. I think it's an okay idea, but I'm not sure that the language is worked out well enough to proceed with it as is.
All right. Ms. Alsweiger.
Madam Chair, Representative Klinzing, and the rest of the members, I do think that when you can discuss the word prohibit within the group that would discuss a model policy, and something could be written in terms of a good faith effort or something like that. We know that we can't be always exact prohibiting kids, after all, from doing things. After all, they are children. I mean, as adults, sometimes we are prohibited from doing the things maybe we shouldn't. However, model policies, I think, might be a good avenue. Get the stakeholders in. Do your best. I think that would be an avenue to approach it.
Mr. Dean, what does your policy say? Does it say prohibit, or how do you handle that particular
issue? Madam Chair, it's a bullying prohibition policy. There are several pieces in here that would relate to teachers. It says no teacher, administrator, volunteer, contractor, or other employee of the school district shall permit, condone, or tolerate bullying. Is one of the provisions. The school district will act to investigate all complaints of bullying and will discipline or take appropriate action against any student, teacher, administrator, volunteer, contractor, or other employee who is found to have violated the policy. You've got reporting procedures. A teacher, school administrator, volunteer, contractor, or other school employee should be particularly alert to possible situations, circumstances, or events that might include bullying, and then they're to report if they think it might be. And there's a retaliation provision if they retaliate against somebody that reports.
Yes.
And then they get, there's training provisions in the policy, mm-hmm. too.
Representative Goodwin, you have a response to that?
Yeah, Madam Chair, and I have read your policy, and as I said before, it's excellent, and it's much stronger than just this word prohibits in here, and a lot of schools have already adopted it. So I would really like to make a little stronger statement than just saying we're against this or, you know, mm-hmm. we oppose this. I'd like to say that the schools need to prohibit it. That all that's saying is that they'd say, you can't do this. This is not acceptable. And it doesn't mean that there's any, I think the schools are more at risk of getting sued if they don't have a strong policy than if they do, quite frankly. I really do believe that they're much greater risk of being sued.
Mr. Dean, on the, would the good faith exception help in Representative Klinzing's situation where she had made a good faith effort to prevent the bullying in her classroom so that there was not any... Is that, would that cover that?
The good faith exception that you're proposing here is if you in good faith tried to comply with the policy, but for some reason something happened, you know, you didn't, the report didn't get to where it was supposed to get to at the time it was supposed to get there, or whatever, that wouldn't put you in trouble because you tried to comply with the policy.
Okay. So under Representative Klinzing's situation, that would cover her, you know, situation that she's done everything. I mean, I also have, you know, frustrations with the amount of bullying that goes on towards teachers, too. Teachers are just under assault all the time. Yeah. And, you know, some of these kids are not necessarily little tykes that are, you know, 3 feet tall. They are, you know, sixth graders, but they weigh 180 pounds and are 6 feet tall, and they are, you know, pushing their weight around towards the teachers, too. So, you know, that goes both ways as far as teachers putting themselves into danger all the time, trying to keep kids from killing themselves, too. Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, I spoke with Representative Goodwin about this too. I have one further suggestion for amending on line 11. In place of that prohibits, I would put the word opposing. Okay. It's still, I think, moving us in the direction that the author of the amendment desired, but yet not, it also addresses Representative Klinzing's concerns, I think.
Madam Chair, Representative Klinzing, if I change that, will you vote for this amendment?
Representative Olson.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I meant Representative Olson.
Me?
Yeah.
Madam Chair.
Representative, who's talking?
I'm not sure.
Who asked? Who just said
Madam Chair? Madam Chair, I did.
Oh.
Representative Olson. Yeah, as amended with all these changes, I'll support the amendment.
Okay, Representative
Slaughter. Madam Chair, I am pleasantly surprised with the direction of the discussion today and that we're moving towards a serious policy about bullying. I mean, part of this could have been prevented if we had just had a hearing on Representative Goodwin's bill. I just hope everybody will support this. And I just, as far as Representative Biskins, I mean, I and your comments about taking this seriously, you know, I don't know what you're waiting for, if you're waiting for the next Columbine or you're waiting for the next cold spring. But, you know, I think that this is a very serious issue.
Madam Chair.
And I have a son that has been bullied, and I've heard words that I have never, ever heard, ever. But they come from middle schoolers. It is a very serious issue.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representatives Slawick, that was out of line. For goodness sakes, I'm just asking for a definition. And everything you talk about is already defined, and we already have policies on it. And I understand the frustration that goes. I have four children myself, and there's harassment, and there's abuse, and there's fightings that go on, right? I don't think this language works. I don't think this language does anything more than already isn't done in schools. And I do believe that there are good and caring people at the administrative level, at the teaching level, and at the school board levels who are doing the very, very best they can. And I don't think this language does anything to further what they are already doing.
Members. I know that people have strong feelings, and it would be better if we, you know, tried to just recognize those opinions and strong feelings without doing any kind of negative comments. And let's try to keep this on a high plane. It's been on a high plane so far. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members. An observation and a question. Mm-hmm. My observation is that the language that we are proposing to adopt online or on page one is essentially redundant when we go to page three, section 56. And when I listen to the witnesses who have testified, what they are really asking for is the language on page 3, section 56, which would mandate a policy, but we're going to let them on a school board by school board local control type thing essentially set the policy. The question that I have is that in section 56, it refers to a statute that we are going to make a bullying policy consistent with a specific statute, and I don't know what that statute
that
says.
Mr. Representative Newman, that would refer back to this first paragraph on page one. So it would be, you'd have this descriptor language that was clause A, and then your model policy would refer back to the direction there.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. And Madam Chair, Representative Wardlow.
Madam Chair, my issue was taken care of, so okay. I don't need to talk.
All right. And Representative Sikora.
Can I just clarify, Madam Chair?
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to say adopt a written district-wide policy that opposing bullying? Is that what we're doing?
I would think it would be opposes, but Representative Goodwin, are you accepting that?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm accepting that.
Okay. Right. So now we have the bill, or the amendment, I think, in the form that we wanted. Are there any other questions, comments, suggestions?
Sure.
Representative Dean, or Mr. Deans. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
I've been here a long time.
Demote you there.
Madam Chair, every school board has got a procedure that it uses when it adopts policies, and over half of these school boards that we surveyed have already adopted one. I guess my concern would be with the language beginning on line six, the in consultation with all those people. I mean, lots of them have already adopted this policy, and now they're going to be out of compliance with the statute because they're not in. You know, they have procedures that are set up out there for what they do when they do their policies. They take input just like this committee does when they're doing it. It seems to me that that going back to our Representative Greiling's original concept, I certainly wouldn't put words in her mouth this time, but it seemed to me that what she was looking for is something that said each school board must adopt a district-wide policy that opposes bullying. And we'll do the consultation with people that we
represent. Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Deans, that's exactly what I was saying, and I'm surprised it didn't already pass while I was out in the hall talking to someone.
Well, Representative Greiling, we kind of went back to Representative Goodwin said that she thought that the clause A would be important to have as a descriptor to the section 56. And Mr. Deans does make the point that if you already have policies, do we then need to change those policies to conform with something else? So I guess it's that. Representative Goodwin, what do you think about that?
Okay, let's try this now. Each school board, in consultation with administrators, teachers, employees, pupils, parents, and community members, shall. Social service agent must adopt a written wide policy. Otherwise, at this point, I would say,
could we put some language in there, unless the school board has already adopted a policy?
How about a school district that doesn't have one?
I mean, I think, Representative Goodwin, probably the model policy and the good faith exception would probably take care of everything that you want to accomplish for all those districts that don't have a policy yet. Because it does talk about training maybe what we should do, folks, is lay this over for a little bit, since we've already spent over 45 minutes on it, and put our heads together. Maybe with that, or do you think we're close enough to get something done? Representative Olson?
Well, if I understand correctly, it seems like we're close. If Representative Greiling was suggesting to on line 6 put each school board and then delete the rest of line 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 up to the comma and put must adopt a written policy policy opposing bullying, and then the rest of the amendment as we've discussed. Well, but if they've already had...
Well, then they would...
If it's a... Madam Chair, for those who have already adopted policy, then they've already done it.
Great.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
All right. That's
okay,
wonderful.
So we can get through this.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do. Each school board must adopt a written wide policy opposing bullying, and then the rest of that. I do want to say, though, that my intent is very strongly that the school board will work with the parents and the teachers and the community members and other people that need to know about that school district's policy, like law enforcement and so on. So I hope that the school board doesn't just grab a policy and say, here it is, this is what we're going to do. Because unless the teachers and the parents and the staff and everybody else understand what that policy is and have a say in it, it's not going to work.
Well, Representative Goodwin, I think that there is on the model policy, it talks about not only just developing a policy, but providing information, training, programs, and other initiatives. So, you know, I think that this is, I think everybody wants to make sure that our kids are treated well in school. And as Representative Biskin said, I think teachers do this all the time. Okay. All right, now we have the amendment to the amendment before us, to the A3 amendment. Everybody understand what we did? Representative Kroenke.
Madam Chair, I think it might be helpful, since we've had a little discussion, to actually have someone reread the amendment so I know what I'm voting no against.
All right, or Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, on the document H3016A3, page 1, line 4, remove prohibiting and insert opposing. Page I'm changing the head note.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Larson. I should have kept my mouth shut. I'll just listen.
Madam Chair, on page 1, line 4, the head to change the head note, remove prohibiting and insert opposing. Page 1, line 6, delete A and everything from the comma afterwards, comma in consultation with administrators. Page 1 deletes lines 7, 8, 9, and 10 through the period. On page 1, line 11, delete that prohibits and insert well, it could be opposing or that opposes.
That opposes.
And delete the comma and everything that follows up to the period. On page 1, line 12, after notified, insert students, comma. Page 1, delete lines 16 through 24. Page 2, delete lines 1 through 28.
Madam Chair, thank you. Yes, that sounds right. And I will withdraw my request for a roll call, hoping that this is, since we all worked on this together, that this is something that'll go in the bill and I don't have to introduce the entire bill, bullying bill on the floor and get votes for it. Representative Biskins, thank you.
All right. Representative Goodwin withdraws her roll call. Now we have the amended A3 before us. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposition?
No.
I think the A3 amendment as amended passes. All right. We're on to Article 3. Representative Mariani.
I have a quick question on
Article 2? Yes.
Article 2. Excuse me. It's on, just trying to get my bearings here. It's on page 4.
All right.
Section 7 is student retention. This is, I think, the Wardlaw language. As I understand this now, and, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about this, so we know the issue, but on line 31, the language says must consider retaining. So it's my understanding that the effect of this is that, as opposed to kind of earlier versions, that this is really more sort of permissive language. The reason I raise it is because in the committee I raised how my own school district has, I think, a pretty effective program. Yeah. We're really worried about that running interference with it. So is that the effect of that?
Yes, it is. Representative Mariani, I think we really kind of wanted to model it after the St. Paul program because it has been so positive and so successful. I think they've kind of figured out how to do this. So that's kind of what we wanted to do.
Thank you.
All right. I have to find the one. Okay, Article 3, our special programs. We have some clarification on page 1 and 2 regarding online learning, that if you have a student that has an IEP and taking online learning courses, that they have to, those online learning courses have to reflect the IEP that's been adopted for those students. Then in section 2, we have just some clarification on the interagency intervention service system. That it should include children with disabilities, birth through 21. We have a birth mandate in Minnesota. We've had it for years, and it just clarifies that. Most of these are all technical clarifications to this particular area of statute. Moving on to, and all of this on pages 5, 6, 7 are all clarifications to special education intervention issues. Then on page 8 and 9 and 10, I'm going to let Mr. Crow or Mr. Strom explain the changes in the special education excess cost aid program.
Madam Chair, members, as members are aware, special education revenue is paid in two parts right now, the base year regular funding and the excess cost funding. What these sections address is the excess cost funding. Regular funding is base year funding. That is, it's based on the cost from 2 years prior. Excess cost is currently a current year funded program. The department's recommended change essentially would make that a base year funded program so that districts would have more certainty about the amount of special education excess cost revenue that they're going to receive. However, to adjust for those cases, when there is a big change, this affects mainly small districts where a district may have a student with very high costs enter the district. Because that wouldn't be picked up in the base until 2 years later, the department is recommending a new provision, which is found on the bottom of page 9, called Supplemental Excess Cost Aid. And the purpose of this is to still allow an adjustment for those school districts that have a small school districts that have a large change in their special ed costs between 2 years. The other changes essentially correspond to switching the excess cost to a base year formula.
Okay. All right. Any questions on that? That is the end of Article 3, and we don't have any amendments to Article 3. The next article is the facilities article. And Mr. Crow or Mr. Stone, do you want to? Is this?
Madam Chair, member, Section 1 is the. Yeah.
Change
Yeah, section 1 is a technical change. Section 2 is the forecast change for debt service. We have a statutory appropriation, so 123B54 has to be changed whenever there's a forecast change to account for those for that forecast change.
Okay. Then the section 3 is the telecommunications internet access equity aid. As you saw in the spreadsheet, we appropriate $4.5 million to that program. And there's the language in the next following few pages to that. The next one is the building lease levy that we restore, allowing districts to levy for 100% of their levy. And then the maximum effort debt service on page 7, section 5, this is Representative Erickson's bill that would move the rate from 32% to 28%. Mr. Crow, do you want
Madam Chair, I just wanted to make a notation on line 100 of the levy tracking sheet. I inadvertently left off the debt equalization, the reduction in debt equalization aid, which actually is a net levy increase because there's less equalization aid. So for 06, there's $671,000.5 more of levy, and for 07, $553,000, making the net levy increase 26.9 for 06 instead of 26.2, and 22.8 for 07 instead of 22.3.
Okay. All right. The next one is, again, still continues the internet access on page 9. And then on page 10, we have the Mounds View District ability to levy up to $200,000 for a maintenance facility. We have the Glencoe Silver Lake levy. We have disabled access levy authority for East Grand Forks. And then we have instruction to the department and the internet access equity aid appropriation. And we have an amendment to Article 4, two amendments to Article 4. Representative Abler, you have the A4 amendment.
A5, Madam Chair.
Pardon?
Or A4.
A4.
What did you want? Okay, that's fine. We'll do that one first. Madam Chair, this has to do with classroom acoustics. And if you recall, there was a bill that we heard that asked for this to be included in the health and safety funding. That was a problem because it cost a lot of money, and it wasn't a good way to go, but it just at least brought the issue before us. The Senate has a proposal to put this into the must-do list, and I'm not comfortable with that. This is, I think, a very soft way to handle this very important matter, and it requires districts, when they do their construction, that they would consider how they would address these national standards. And in many cases, there's testifiers here if you want to hear anything more about it, but I don't know that we need to, but in many cases, for the same exact dollars, you can make a wall treatment selection. Like these walls here are soft. You could make them painted walls, and it wouldn't cost much more or less. You could, you know, and if it's paneling that's bouncy, though, that stuff isn't, you could use a hard surface or a soft surface on the floors, carpeting, et cetera, for very much the same dollars. And so this is my effort for virtually, at least for very little cost or no cost, to allow the positive parts of this, these proposals to go forward, at least to help, to a great extent, the hearing impaired students that attempt to learn in these classrooms. So I hope we can.
All right. Support. Any questions, comments on this? Not all in favor of the A4 amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposition? The A4 amendment is adopted. Representative Mariani.
Representative Abel, you probably don't want to use exactly this material because Representative Egan and I were here last night at about 11 o'clock. That panel over there fell off and some lobbyists leaned up against it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's part of the record now, so we'll know that that's a bad idea.
I was wondering what happened to that door. I kept looking at it. I thought, well, maybe we're getting new stuff or something. Yes.
Well, that was them.
Yeah. All right, the next amendment is the A5 amendment. And
Madam Chair. Oh, that's mine.
Yes.
And I think move the A5 amendment. And I do have an oral amendment, or at least I can incorporate. The amendment calls for municipalities, and I think we should limit it to school districts and charter schools. And so, Madam Chair, if I could orally strike on line 6 the word municipality, and on line 7 strike as defined in section 471.345, comma, subdivision 1, comma, is, and then insert school district and a charter school are. And so it would read as if the effective date of this section, a school district, would that be school districts? Ms. Larson. Okay. Okay, so we'd say a school district and a charter school are prohibited from purchasing these products. And that's the amendment, Madam Chair.
Should it be R, a school district or a charter school? Or does it make any difference?
The syntax you can...
I don't know. They're both okay. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'm just curious, Madam Chair and Representative Abler, what would a district be buying instead? I mean, you see so much of, I think I know what we're talking about here. When we're talking about the chromated copper arsenate treated lumber, what would be the alternative and what might be the additional cost of the alternative?
Well, Madam Chair, I can discuss the amendment. I just was doing the amendment to the amendment first to get it in the order, then we can, I'll explain it and that might answer your question. Can I incorporate that amendment as into my amendment, Madam Chair?
What was your amendment?
Oh, no, to take out municipality and...
Yes, maybe, yes.
Okay, so...
That can be considered an author's amendment.
I'll incorporate that.
All
and
right.
Madam Chair, to the amendment then. There's a national effort to phase out arsenic-treated wood, and as you know, in the line of work I'm in, I think that heavy metals are very bad. In fact, there's plenty of evidence, if you wanted to hear about it for a while, about how bad arsenic is and mercury and lead. And this is a continuing effort to remove these heavy metals from the environment. The bill you heard a couple days ago called for $1 million a year in levy to do this very thing. And again, that's not realistic. But this amendment merely would provide that we're not going to build any more of these projects that will have to be remediated someday. And so even it's even worded so if a district is poised, having bought this stuff, they can still stick it up. So if they purchased it already, they can still do it, and so there's no harm to them. But at least when they're going to buy something new, they're not going to buy an arsenic product. Currently, Menards doesn't even sell arsenic products anymore. They've got this non-arsenic stuff. And so the national trend is to get out away from here anyway. And many of them use the prefabricated steel and plastic and accessible things, but in many cases the list of things that you do with these are things that we still do still would use walkways, retaining walls, fences, picnic tables, etc. And picnic tables, kids they chew on the edges of them, and this material leaches into the soil, and then you have contaminated soil, which kids eat. I have a bunch of boys that are bigger now; they quit eating dirt, but they do when they're little. And they get the hose and you get home. So, Madam Chair, it just seems sensible that that the best way to go is just to quit making these things. And I believe it's not any implication to anybody except that we're just going to be more wise about it. So I hope you can support it.
Representative Lindsay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Abler, is it only lumber that gets arsenic treatment, or are there other products that could be treated with this same arsenic?
Representative Abel?
Madam Chair, I'm not conversant on that. This is we did prohibit arsenic-containing fertilizer last year, the year before.
Mm-hmm.
This is just to do with lumber. This has to do with playgrounds, especially. And so if there's something beyond that, we could expand it. But this is meant to be narrowly focused just on what districts would be building, where this would be.
Madam Chair, to that point?
Oh, Mr. Strom has an answer.
Madam Chair, Representative Klinsing, the CCA, the chromated copper arsenate, is used as a pesticide, essentially to keep lumber from rotting. So it's usually used in lumber that's going to be used outdoors. It may be used in some other types of products, but its general purpose when it was used was for preserving lumber against rotting. But it's essentially a pesticide that's added during the curing process.
Okay. I think we've talked about this enough. All right. All in favor of the A5 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposition? The amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
All right. Moving right along. Article 5 is nutrition and accounting and other programs. Do you want to explain this one, Mr. Crow? Oh, Oh, I'm sorry. This is, I know this one. I should know this one very well. This one is going to direct the state in future years, in the odd year, after we've made our appropriations in our budget year, that if we have any surplus revenues, we would first begin to pay back the property tax recognition shift, and then after that is paid back, then we would pay back the school payment or school aid payment schedules, pay that back. So we're trying to get our books back in order more quickly than we did years ago. Then, Mr. Strom, do you want to talk about the taconite revenue?
Sure. Madam Chair, there's a couple of provisions in here related to taconite revenue. Those provisions, bottom of page 2, and also on page 5 and page 6. What those provisions do is adjust the way that school districts recognize taconite revenue. Formerly, the producers of taconite made payments to the school district all in February. A couple of years ago, the tax bill changed that, and now the payments go twice a year to school districts, one in February and the second half payment in August. Unfortunately, the school language wasn't fixed at that time, and so because August falls on the other side of the fiscal year, there was some concern that the payment to the taconite school districts wouldn't work as it should. So these three sections are intended to adjust the payment process so that the school district receives the revenue in the fiscal year in which we were expecting that they would receive it.
Okay, and then you want to also, the other changes on lines 3 and 4 are just technical.
Yeah, Madam Chair, most of the changes in this article have to do with our accounting and our ways that school districts reserve revenue and count revenue for alternative programs. On page 2, section 2, has to do with the way we calculate the reserve revenue for school districts that are members of area learning centers. Then on page 3, section 4 has to do with the way we count general education revenue for chartered schools. This is just clarifying language that adjusts for the extended time revenue that we created last year, and the issue is how the transportation is handled. As members are aware, when a charter school provides its own transportation, it gets the full amount of general ed revenue. When it asks the school district to provide that transportation, a portion of its general ed revenue is transferred to the school district. This clarifies what happens for that portion of revenue that comes for extended time programs. Then, Madam Chair, on page 4, line section 6 is for pupils attending a contract alternative program, and again, clarifying language as to how that revenue is calculated. And then the last change, page 5, that we haven't talked about, line 7, is for also for the contract alternatives to clarify how the basic portion of that revenue is calculated.
And then moving on, we have the fund transfers for Foley, Chocayo, Alberta, Kimball, Cloud West, Northeast Metro, Butterfield, and then section on forecasting a base budget. Any questions on this facility section?
Yes.
Oh, we have an Article 5 amendment. This is a technical. This is the A6. Does everyone have that? Oh, we're just passing it out. I'll wait till everybody gets this. I'll move the A6 amendment. Everybody have it? Oh, no. Sorry. We don't have it yet. This is Representative Goodwin that's being passed on. And Mr.
Madam Chair, last year when we created the online learning program, we allowed the department to charge a fee for certification of online learning providers and for courses for reviewing challenges by enrolling districts. And at that time when we created the fee, we didn't designate where it should be deposited or how it should be appropriated. So this language just clarifies that the fee is deposited in the state general fund.
All right. Any questions on that? Not? Time to look at it? Okay. All right. All in favor of the A6 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposition? The amendment is adopted. Article 6 is the libraries, and this has the Representative Johnson's requirement to put filtration systems on libraries. And then we have the appropriations. We also have on subdivision 3 on page 4, we have the clarification as to the 80-20 distribution for the Regional Library Telecommunications Aid Program. Any questions on that Article 6? Not. Article 7 are our early childhood programs, and we have language in there that clarifies what school readiness should be doing, and it says that you should start with age 3 and a half. So that there's a lot of language in here that kind of tightens up and makes school readiness language more specific. It really is still incorporating the main thrust of school readiness, but cleaning up the language, and provides for the application process and approval process for school readiness. And then we have the appropriation where we put an additional one point something million in school readiness. 1 million. And then we have the repealers, and the repealers are just the old language that's repealed on the school readiness area. Are there any questions on that? If not, Article 8 is the community education levy restoration and the language for that. Any questions on that one? Article 9 is self-sufficiency and lifelong learning. This is the clarification on the lead abatement program, moving the lead abatement responsibility to the Department of Health, and you'll see later on the transfer of that monies to the Department of Health. On page 5, you have the basic, the state total adult basic education aid. We, since the CORES bill would allow ABC Consortia to recapture any unexpended money. Right now that goes back to the general education formula, and we've got a complex ABE formula. This would allow them to recapture that starting in 2005 and then in 2005 and then going forward. And we're hoping that this will actually help a little bit as we begin to have more Hmong folks coming in, to particularly in the St. Paul area. St. Paul has one of the larger consortia, and hopefully this will help a little bit as they prepare for those folks. And then on page 7, you see the lead abatement transfer. It looks like a reduction, but it's being transferred to Health and Human Services. You have the adult basic education aid adjustment, and that is it. Any questions on that article? All right. Article 10 is the state agencies. Oh, this is Representative Olson's efficiency review program. And section 2 is the reduction in the agency budget. And then we also specifically reduced the agency had testified that they would be reducing the Board of Teaching and the school administrators by 3%. We just put that in law. We did not reduce the student organization by that 3%. We appropriate $100,000 to the department to monitor or to conduct these efficiency reviews. And so then there's Clause K is the adjustment for the Department of Education. Then we have the a reduction in the Minnesota State Academies of $31,000. And then we also have the reduction in the Purpose Center for the Arts, 3% reduction also. Any questions on those? Article 11 is the deficiencies, and I'll just let Mr. Crowe talk about that.
Madam Chair and members, this article basically aligns all of our forecast appropriations to the most recent the February 2004 forecast. There's a provision at the end of the article, section 25. There's a separate bill that has these forecast changes as well as the human services forecast changes, section 25 ensures that these forecast changes as well as the changes we make in appropriations in the earlier articles are not superseded by a subsequent bill that would change them the wrong way.
And Article 12, our technical and conforming amendments. I will draw your attention. We have passed and thought we had put this in law, the improving graduation rates for students with emotional behavioral disorders, and it was left out last year, so we're putting that language back in to make sure that, because it was passed and accepted in conference committee, it was inadvertently left out. And then we have some other technical changes. They are all purely technical. And then finally, Article 13 is the standards that were passed off the floor of the House the other day. The Senate is also putting their standards in their policy and finance bill, so that there will be this large bill. Representative Breiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is my question. Is this identical to what passed off the floor?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
All right. If there are no other questions, we want to now move that Articles 1 through 13 as amended. I would move that Articles 1 through 13, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to Ways and Means, taxes, and that staff be instructed to make technical changes conforming the language and the spreadsheets. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposition?
Aye.
The motion is adopted, and House File 3016 is passed, as amended.
Madam Chair, is the bill going to Ways and Means or to taxes?
It goes to taxes. Thank you. And there will be no meeting tomorrow. Thank you for your attendance.